Welcome to episode 129 of Redboard Rewind. My name is Spencer Luganbuehl, and today my special guest is Southern California handicapper we've had on plenty of times, the Trip Note Pro Master himself, Benny Southstreet. Me and Benny go over three races from this past Saturday at Santa Anita Park. Those races are 3, 5, and 10. And some angles that we talk about are how important pedigree is on first-time surface switches, and also knowing which barns like to fire first time out. This is Redboard Rewind. It's the same old story in this tugboat. We go back and forth. We go back and forth. It ain't good for me. What we do this for? We go back and forth. Won't do this no more. All we are, always have it sell it. All we are, always have it sell it. And now I'd like to welcome back my special guest for this week's Redboard Rewind. He's someone who I've had on multiple times, someone I'm glad to have back on these airwaves. It's Benny Southstreet. Benny, how are you?
I'm doing great, Spencer. How are you? Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you as well, my man. Glad to have you back on. How has Santa Anita been treating you so far?
Well, it's my favorite track in the world. So in terms of, like, if my spreadsheet is black or red, it's currently red. That's okay. There's a long way to go, and it's just a beautiful place out there. I've been out there pretty much every day, so it's tough to beat. It's like Disneyland for adults.
I can't agree with you more. I haven't been out there yet, but I kind of feel like it's Saratoga on the East Coast. Obviously, you know, Los Al, super short meets, Del Mar's got now the two meets, but it's such a grind when you get to Santee, and obviously I feel like that helps you out being a trip handicapper and allowing you to just see more horses over time over the same type of track. How much does the longer meet kind of help you compared to the shorter meets we usually see over in Southern California?
You know, it does for a little while. But if I'm being honest, as the meet goes along at Santa Anita, the horse population tends to dwindle a little bit. It'll come back again near the end of the meet. So the middle of the meet, there's not too much meat on the bone. I still love playing those races, but you do have to be selective in what you're playing, because the betting opportunities in terms of how I like to play, which is horizontally, there's only so many big fields that run over turf, which is kind of what I like to focus in on. So we'll see how it goes. The beginning of the meet's been good. They've had some really good cards. And I think the end of the meet will as well as we get closer to Derby time.
You kind of already answered my next question. Obviously, being the trip handicapper, turf I would feel would be more of your acumen, kind of where you want to strike. Although with the dirt, I kind of feel like a lot of the races are kind of like, yep, they went around in a circle this time. There wasn't really much. Obviously, with how those races usually tend to go with speed horses usually holding on out there in Southern California. Have you noticed that kind of being the same type of bias this year?
You know, there has been a lean, statistically speaking. I want to say on dirt, almost half of the races have been won by either the one or the two hole. But I'm just starting to really go through it right now and take a closer look rather than decide while I'm at the races, which can actually get you in big trouble. If you think there's a bias and then you're wrong, you're just making poor wagers. But I do think there has been a lean towards the inside and towards speed a little bit, but some of the fields have also been shorter as well on dirt. So that will inflate any number, not just the inside post. And inherently speaking, the shortest way around the track usually wins, right? So if you've got a little bit of speed, it's been holding up, but we'll see how it goes as the meet goes along. And in terms of turf racing, you know, Southern California turf racing has really improved because through the Del Mar meet, you have the Ship and Win. So you're getting a lot of turf horses that come in from out of town. You've seen horses from all over the country, from Florida to, you know, Louisiana, New York, and the Midwest. And they're the fields that have been really big, and they were at Del Mar. So I actually think the quality of turf racing in Southern California has really improved. Used to be a great angle that I would almost toss Southern California horses when they go up against others. But mm-hmm. I'm curious to see how that pans out the rest of the year, because the fields are just, they're a lot more robust.
Another thing you brought up, talking about biases, if you kind of like lean on one throughout the day, it's like, oh, if the first three races are always won by front runners, oh, it's, you know, it's front end and it's, you know, and the rail, and how that can just become so decisive and just bury you as a horse player. The few times I feel like I've been right on that and I hit that 16 to one shot, I feel like then I hit the second part of the double and it's a 4-5 anyway, and everyone had it, and it doesn't really end up working out that way. I feel like bias work should be done, you know, at home, not so much during the race day, because if you're wrong, you're buried. If you're right, I don't know if you're winning as much as you really can either way.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, you're probably not going to see anything that anyone else is seeing. And sometimes they change the track. So as a great example, on January 13th at Aqueduct, it was a moving sidewalk. Mm-hmm. Everything went wire to wire. Everything was up the rail. And I had the first five races there as being dominant speed and dominant inside. And then I want to say the sixth race was more fair. And then the end of the card was actually biased towards the outside. So I know they did something to it. I don't know what they did. But yeah, if there's a speed bias, for example, it's pretty easy to extend that harrow another inch and roll it around the track, and it would change everything. So you got to be careful with that. Whereas if there's a late running bias, I don't think there's a whole lot that a track superintendent can do to speed it up mid race, you know, mid card rather. But yeah, it's a trap that we all fall into, and you just got to be a little bit careful. So in my opinion, looking at the end of the day is best, because you can separate the card out if need be.
Let's kind of talk connections real quick. Obviously, everyone loves Flavian and Rispoli. Is there a kind of jock that you're kind of seeing the ball real well early in the meet, and maybe there's some connections that are really firing in on certain spots, and, you know, maybe going under the radar a little bit?
Oh, under the radar. I think Edwin's had a good meet. He's mm-hmm. won a few. There are a few that, and I'd prefer not name names that to me are automatic tosses.
Sure.
So those would actually be under the radar from a negative value perspective, which is actually the best kind of value. But there are a few riders in there, and all you got to do is look at the standings, and they're riders that I have not been fond of for a long time. And actually during this meet, a few of these guys, we were talking like combined, you know, 2 for 100.
Yeah.
You know, 3 or 4 guys. One of them did win a couple races the other day. And but yeah, that's kind of what more I'm looking for is the negative value stuff. I do think Edwin's having a good meet with limited mounts. He typically rides prices, and I want to say he's got 5 or 6 wins and is a positive ROI. So he's always a good one. And actually his trade's improved. He used to be just a speed rider, send. And he's had a couple really nice wins where he's anchored and come off the pace for wins. So he's doing great.
I remember, I think it was even just betting horse racing for dummies. They say the top 10 in the standings went around 90% of the races. So in some of these races, you see these bug riders who maybe, you know, aren't all that good. And they're going to be 50-40 to 1. And sometimes those are just safe tosses for on the win end. But sometimes you see these younger guys, and that's why whenever I'm doing jockey standings, I kind of keep track of those guys who finish with above 10 to 1 shots that hit the board, because that can get really valuable for exactas and trifectas down the road as well.
Yeah, there are a couple bugs out there that are doing well. I'm glad you brought that up. Diego Herrera is a skilled rider. I had mentioned something a little while ago on Twitter. He was 0 for the moon. And he was doing nothing wrong. He just was riding 50 to one shots. He ended up breaking through, and he's probably, you know, I think he has 10 or 11 wins now, and he's winning probably around a 10-12% clip, but he's skilled. And then there's another kid that has been riding in those 1,000 yard races, which are basically, you know, Lo Sal wrote the mixed breed races mm-hmm. to take away some of the horses from Santa Anita and kind of fill their own cards. So those first 4 or 5 races at Lo Sal, even though they're 1,000-yard races, they're thoroughbred races. And this guy is doing well there. His name's Ramirez. He's another bug, and I think he had his first win at Santa Anita over the weekend. And again, he did everything correct. He was aggressive. He did not seem intimidated at all. He was down inside. He was ambidextrous, had a good left hand through the lane, and came through for his first win. So he's a guy I might put on my radar as, you know, don't be scared off by either Diego or Ramirez.
I love it all. Let's try and get some people some hints and tips going through this car. We'll start with race number three. It was the State Bred California Cup Derby, 1 and 1/16 miles on the dirt. What did you like in this one, Benny?
You know, my only opinion in here was that I didn't like Straight Up G. I thought he just had a perfect trip last time. He did run away and hide, which is pretty much what he should have done, and that was his only route race. So I knew he was going to be a short number and a play against. I played horizontally, and I used three horses that I thought if I could catch one of them, I'd get value. And I used the one Highland Ghost, who I thought was very sharp sprinting over the synthetic at Golden Gate and his prior. He actually galloped out very well. So I thought he might be able to route. Pratt got on. That was a big positive. I was a little bit scared off. He was dead on the board, which is not something you see from Pratt. So that scared me. But I did stick with him anyway. And then I also used the three Fast Draw Munnings and the four Phineas, who wasn't getting bet a whole lot. But those two both had miserable trips in defeat versus Straight Up G. They were in some bad positions, and both actually were climbing quite badly. And I thought they had every right to improve and turn the table on the favorite.
I kind of love your just analysis overall in that race. I narrowed it down to three, the four, and the five. I didn't want Straight Up G. First of all, horses that win and hide at Los Al, I don't want to bet next time out. Especially with blue fractions from time form. That's just not my style. 4% rider stays on. Obviously had two wins. 19 starts, 5%, but with a positive ROI for Baltus. I just didn't really know what to expect here. And the horse's only loss was at Santa Anita. Fast Draw Munnings for me, listen, Drayden Van Dyke, a lot of people like, he's just not one for me. 0 for 22 is what I had him at going into the day. 70-70-66. So he kind of has the same type of movement as Straight Up G on the buyers. And I know that you're not a big buyer guy, but I don't want one who drops even lower and doesn't seem to have that improvement angle. I ended up on Phineas, man. That this horse in the American Fair, the Del Mar Futurity, this horse always seemed to show up. Didn't matter the rider, didn't matter anything. And gets Johnny V. And listen, everyone knows who Johnny V is. But I like the ship out there to California. I think he's been riding plenty fine all right so far. I just wonder if this one could turn the tables. His race two back was only a couple points off of the King Glorious. My pick was the number four, Phineas. Let us see who wins this California Cup Derby right now.
And they're off in the Cal Cup Derby. Highland Ghost and Straight Up G, the first two out. Sippin' and Kissin' comes away a joint third. Fast Draw Munnings is next. Then Agador Spartacus on the outside of Phineas. Into the first turn, and it's Highland Ghost to set the pace. And Straight Up G will track from second. A length and a half back to Sippin' and Kissin' at the rail in third. Then Fast Draw Munnings, three off the pace in fourth. Phineas is not far away, only 3.5 off the lead in between horses at this stage. And another three back to Agador Spartacus. Heading to the 5/8. Highland Ghost a half length. Straight Up G up alongside second. It's another length and a half. Phineas moving up between rivals. Fast Draw Munnings on the outside. And Sippin' and Kissin' is down on the fence, now claiming third as they pass the half-mile pole. A half dozen back. Agador Spartacus not keeping pace. Into the far turn, it's Highland Ghost in front. He's been there throughout. Straight Up G ahead back second. Then Fast Draw Munnings third. And now Straight Up G takes the lead away as the field approaches the quarter pole. Fast Draw Munnings takes second. Highland Ghost back to third. Phineas will swing to the outside. They're at the top of the stretch. And it's Straight Up G getting a serious test from Fast Draw. Munnings on the outside. They'll arrive at the eighth pole head and head. Straight Up G at the rail. Fast Draw Munnings on the outside. Nose to nose. Four back to Phineas. Coming to the 16th pole. Straight Up G digging in. Fast Draw Munnings trying to get by. Fast Draw Munnings puts his head in front close to home. Here's the line. Fast Draw Munnings.
And Fast Draw Munnings gets it done with a 10-40 winning mutual. The buyer coming back at 68. So improved a couple points. Obviously, I had the right three horses, just didn't pick the right one. Nice way to survive for you in this leg. Your long shot did end up running dead last in Highland Ghost. What do you think? Was there a problem there, or just what did you see from that trip?
You know, it could have been either didn't want a route or didn't like the dirt. We'll see if he comes back on dirt at Santa Anita. But he did the dirty work. That was one that did the heavy lifting and I think put a little crack in Straight Up G, which was good for me. So when he made the lead early, I felt pretty confident that I was going to land on the winner. I just wasn't sure who it was going to be. We touched on some riders that were maybe not doing very hot in this meet. This would be one of them, and he almost blew it. He was driving this horse right-handed, trying to get past Straight Up G, and man, I was begging for him to do something a little bit different down the lane, and I felt like the horse won in spite of the rider, but they did get it done, so I was happy.
When you see the kind of trip for Straight Up G, obviously gets beaten up by a horse that's never been on dirt before, do you kind of feel like you had the right idea with this one, and this one was one that was beatable, and maybe that race at Lo Sal is more of just a horse that takes the Lo Sal and not so much, you know, he's 0-2 now at Santa Anita as well.
You know, he ran well, though, right? So he did get cracked a little bit, and he looked really strong into the far turn. So I was actually thinking, well, I was wrong in this race. And these top two drew away from the field, so he did nothing wrong. He just got out finished ever so slightly near the wire. So, yeah, I got nothing to say about his performance. I was wrong about him, but that's gambling. I still got my win end because we had one of the ones that fired. But, yeah, he didn't do anything wrong.
Let's move on to race number five, a state-bred maiden claim, 50,000, 245,000, 6 furlongs on the dirt. One of my favorite races to talk to you about. Bunch of maidens, first-time starters. Kind of give people a brief overview who maybe haven't heard you on this podcast about what you like looking at these first-time starters.
Well, you know, I tend to look for a few things with babies. I like horses that have out of their last three works back-to-back gate works. Typically I'm looking for 5/8 gate and 5/8 gate. That's a big one for me, and I love horses that work fast and slow. It shows me the ability to rate. I didn't find a whole lot of those in here, so I kind of started to lean more on the connections than anything. I took a stand against Arthur Spooner. I thought his races over the dirt were just kind of so-so. I figured he was going to be a short number, and he was a short number. I went three deep in here. I used the two, Big Gun, who was probably overbet. Workout reports were really strong on him. But I did think he was probably going to be over, and the trainer statistic wasn't very good, but he did seem live to all the wise guys, so I used him. The one I liked the most was actually the three. Wong is very good at getting horses to show speed. I didn't buy that 105 work on January 5th or January 1st at Santa Anita. Some works for me are just too slow, and to me, I'm calling nonsense. I thought that horse had to be dead fit. When you see a horse that's working, you know, 20 lengths slower than maybe he could be running, it's usually a good sign that the trainer is maybe trying to hide one a little bit, or that the horse is just dead fit, and he doesn't need a big work. So that 105 was a red flag to me, and he did have a nice gate work going into the race at 3/8, a little blowout, just to get his mind prepped for the gate start. And then I liked the 5 as well. Dean Peterson's more than capable, did have 2 5/8 gate works, albeit not back-to-back in his last 4. And I felt like if one of those three won, I'd be in good shape because I did feel like Spooner was going to catch some money.
Is there ever a horse when you see too many gate works? Like, what is too many? Like, for me, I think the sweet number for me is like 4 gate works. It's like, okay, first time he's trying it out. Second time, they really want to see what he's got. You know, by the fourth time, it's like, hey, do you have it going yet? Or are you just still confused by what we're doing in here?
Yeah, I think it's a problem. It's a problem. It's a trainer saying, hey, you need more practice. At least that's the way I read it. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you'll see several. You'll see, you know, out of eight works, you might see 5 or 6 that are out of the gate. So that's a bad sign for me. But, you know, that's a good question. I'd love to see a statistic on that. I'm guessing it's very low because I don't seem to remember any horses that had all those gate works running me over because I usually toss them.
I want to say maybe in Barry Meadows' book there was something on workouts. I don't know if it was 4 specifically, but I remember there was some type of chart that I'll have to look up, and I'll try and get back to you with what that was. For me in this race, Make Mine Wine, everyone knows how good Jonathan Wong is. Maybe not down in Santa Anita. He is, you know, only 1 for 10, but he's 23%, so he must be doing good somewhere else. That's obviously a Golden Gate on the synth. The 105 was peculiar to me, and I kind of put the same thought of you. It was like, if this horse can work out in this shape, it's not even like 103, it's 105. It's completely different, and yet this horse still worked again out of the gate after that. This is a race where the board just made my decision for me. You can handicap as much as you want. Take 2 hours on one race for all I care. If a horse you like is 7-1 and the other maybe horse you like is 2-1, your decision is already made up. Do you kind of agree with me on that, Benny?
You know, I do, but I was a little nervous when this horse was a big overlay.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't catching any money. I was locked in because of my horizontal bets, mm-hmm. but that's when you go to the will pays. He was dead on the board on the win end, but he was actually bet correctly in the will pays.
Yeah.
So I thought for sure there would be a market correction from the computers before this race, and that didn't happen. He actually ended up going off at a pretty big number, but I'm more comfortable with horses getting bet a little bit quieter, but you can see they're catching money. As a matter of fact, we're not going over this race per se. Although we're going over this race, there was a one on Monday. Mm-hmm. It was a first time starter that was coming out of the Sean McCarthy barn, I believe, that was 12-1 morning line, and went, it just stayed sneaky the whole time. Opened at 7, drifted up to 9 or 10, and just kind of toggled back and forth between 9 and 10. Like, I love that. Yeah. That horse is catching mm-hmm. money, but is still a big number, and that horse got it done. But, yeah.
I think, too, when you look at the two favorites as well, like, I don't want Arthur Spooner with all these random, you know, this horse run, lowest number was a 33 to a 55 at like 8 starts. I'd like to see a little bit more than that. I know it's a state brand, I know it's a claimer, but the other one, Tim Yakteen, 0-15 first time starters. He can get a first sort of fire every once in a while, but just this one just didn't scare me. 3 gate works, nothing really. I mean, the last few workouts are okay, but Jonathan Wong at 7-1, I know ice cold, but like you said, it's something Andy Serling talks about all the time. If you look at the will pays, sometimes you can get lucky. Let's see if me and Benny got lucky here with Make Mine Wine, a consensus pick here on Red Bull Rewind right now.
They're off. Smiling goodbye, and Arthur Spooner, the first two out of the gate. Real Pouch comes away in third. Make Mine Wine moving up, 1 from the rail, only 2.5 lengths off the speed, and Big Event is down on the inside. Stay Lit is next, now about 5 or 6 off the lead. Big Gun and Don Daniel at the back of the field. It's Smiling Goodbye past the half-mile pole with a half-length lead. Make Mine Wine now 3/4 back in second. Another 2 back to Arthur Spooner in third. Then Big Gun taking 4th, 4 off the lead. Real Pouch is next. A length and a half to Big Event, who's losing ground. Then Stay Lit and Don Daniel. They're 1/4 mile from home. And Make Mine Wine has overhauled Smiling Goodbye at the top of the stretch. Arthur Spooner is next, followed at the rail by Big Gun. Final furlong, Make Mine Wine about a length now. Arthur Spooner on the outside trying to get into second. Smiling Goodbye and Big Gun between those two. Make Mine Wine takes care of business and strides clear to win by over 3.
Make Mine Wine gets it done. Solid 1660 Win Mutual, 69 the winning buyer. It's kind of nice when the winning horse has a 69, the next horse is a 61. This guy won by daylight. Benny, nice choice on your end.
Yeah, I was a little nervous when he didn't get as much money and there was no correction, but the will pays were, maybe they were cashing out. So yeah, it was good. Unfortunately for me, it didn't matter because I cashed one of my will pays, but then I had started and middle legged, and I ended up missing the next race, which kind of blew. But yeah, it was a good result at the time. I think we popped a bottle of champagne right after that race.
I think this race is so weird just from a board perspective, because you look at the three goes off at 7-1, and then you have a horse at sub 2-1 with an 0-15 first time starting trainer. It's kind of like this to me just seems like a lot of steam that I can't read into from just looking at the form. So I think this might have been AKA barn money, or possibly even, you know, I couldn't even begin to tell you owner money. I couldn't tell.
We'll have to go back and look at it. I off the top of my head, I can't remember the replay, but or rather the trip that he had. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Secretariat lost first time out. So
very fair.
A maiden claimer, I'll be willing to give a pass if there's anything in there. Sometimes all it takes is a little, you know, negative bump or brush away from the gate, and maybe you have a horse whose personality wants to be in front, and that didn't happen. So we'll have to go back and look at it. We'll see what's there.
Let's move on to the last race, race number 10, the State Bred Lee Ann Howard California Cup Oaks, 1 mile on the turf, your favorite surface. What'd you like in this one, Benny?
I loved Vivacious Vanessa. The race on October 16th was next level stuff. That thing was troubled all the way around. From a pace perspective, she had things her own way, but just from a trips perspective, she made a mistake at the start. She was in bad spots. She was held up, stop, go the whole trip. And she still got the job done on debut. And I know that, or at least I'd heard, I should say that this rider really liked that one on debut. And I thought about including him, or rather her, in that Golden State Juvenile on Breeders' Cup weekend. There were three horses that day that Bravo rode into that race. One was Big Switch. I believe one was Big Novel, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. And then he had this one. And I know he had some decisions to make. So that made me a little bit confused that day. But I remembered this one, and I had a huge note on this one. And I ended up singling Vivacious Vanessa.
For me, this race was super tough. You kind of look, when they're on the turf, I want to see at least something on the turf that makes me want to bet the horses. And a lot of these, you know, some of them had one start, no starts. I ended up just making kind of, you know, the Pratt Rispoli play where, you know, Professor's Pride for me with Rispoli and Eddie Truman. Eddie Truman, not the best turf trainer. I just wondered, sire is 10% first time turf, but he gets 15% overall turf winners. Sometimes when I see that big jump on the sire end, I really want to start looking more into that. 329 for the Tomlinson Dam Sire Twirling Candy. Just, this is one that I thought I would want to take a shot with here. And, you know, at 3-1, I thought might have been the right price. And what's pretty much the board was telling me was a wide open race.
It was, yeah. And that's why for me, I ended up singling. I thought outside of the three, I could have used several. And I didn't want to do that. So yeah, I figure I'll gain some equity elsewhere, and I'll swing with a horse that I really thought was impressive on debut.
Let's see what.
And you know, the other thing with that one is, I really love Big Switch. Mm-hmm. I think she's an exceptional cowbred. I don't know what happened to her last time. She laid an egg. She didn't run at all, but I think the world of Big Switch. She was unbelievable first time out, mm-hmm. and she was equally as impressive on Breeders' Cup weekend. She won and galloped out probably a 16th of a mile ahead of the rest of the field. So that last dirt race for me was a complete toss. And she was getting back, Vivacious Vanessa was getting back to a surface that I knew she could handle. And yeah, I was all about the three horse in this race.
It's a three, Vivacious Vanessa four. Benny, for me, it's Professor's Pride with the Umberto Rispoli angle. Let's see what trips these horses get and who wins this race. Right now, coming back.
They're off in the Lee Ann Howard Cal Cup Oaks. Professor's Pride sprints out of the gate. Money Penny has some early speed. Here's Eleuthera now moving into contention. And Precious Inside is close up, too. Vivacious Vanessa racing on the inside of Madiha, about four lengths off the speed. Down at the rail, Big Novel is next. Then they're followed by Dendera in the orange colors. Another couple of lengths to La Deuxième Étoile, who's racing on the outside of Ella Mira. Three lengths back to Rose Dawson and Vaping Angel at the back of the field. Onto the backstretch they go. And it is Eleuthera with a half-length lead. Professor's Pride at the rail in second. Money Penny about four off the pace in third. Then Precious Insight, followed by Big Novel past the half-mile pole. Vivacious Vanessa is next. La Deuxième Étoile is about four wide, making a little bit of progress on the outside of Dendera. A gap of three. Madiha has lost some ground. Ella Mira down at the rail. Rose Dawson and Vaping Angel still trails. They're midway on the far turn, and the battle continues between Eleuthera on the outside and Professor's Pride. They've been right together throughout. Big Novel just behind them. Vivacious Vanessa. Money Penny is the gray. Down at the rail, Ella Mira's looking for room desperately. And in the center of the course, here's Rose Dawson from well out of it. Rose Dawson and Big Novel go on. Between them, it's Vivacious Vanessa. Rose Dawson with a nice rally to victory. And Rose Dawson, big day for Flavian Pratt, wins the Leanne Howard Cal Cup Oaks.
And an outside horse, Rose Dawson, gets it done. 68, the winning buyer. 1140, the winning mutual. Kind of one, I don't want to say forgotten about on the board, but a la Flavian Pratt on the turf beats us again, I guess.
He's special. I've thought the world of him for a very, very long time. And it's one of those where you're a little upset you didn't have him. But, you know, I played my opinion. I was wrong. The post got me out there. You know, I'm not real keen on taking the 11 hole with anybody, but it wasn't surprising to see Flavian work out a trip and roll home. This horse won rather easily.
Let's kind of talk trips in this race. Anybody that you were kind of, you know, enamored to bet, maybe a horse that was first time turf that you think might have shown a little bit of spark or interest on there and, you know, look forward to betting them back on that same surface?
Oh man, I'm so bad. I didn't do my homework, Spencer.
That's all right.
I'll have to go back and look at this replay. But it did seem to me that the correct horses probably won because they were a little bit strung out at the finish. I mean, there were only two that really had a chance at the top of the stretch, wasn't one of them.
For my horse, Professor's Pride finishes dead last. At this point, I think they just go back to dirt. I mean, usually when you run dead last first time on a surface, I tend to think they don't want to go right back to the turf.
Yeah, no, I would say that's fair. I'll have to look at it as well. You know, you never know. Something could have happened to where maybe a little intimidated, or these fillies can be a little bit quirky if they want to be in front, which she's, you know, she wants to be forward. I don't remember if she was or not, but yeah, typically if you're running great on dirt and you lay an egg over another surface, that's probably a safe bet.
I mean, when you start from the lead on turf and you end up dead last, for me, that just kind of tells me I'm looking forward to a surface switch. Yeah. Benny, thanks a lot for coming on. I appreciate you taking the time. Tell us more about, you know, Trip Note Pros, where people can talk to you on social media as well.
Yeah, you can follow me at B South Street. That's my handle. We've also got a Trip Note Pros account, which is just at Trip Note Pros. And the work that we're doing for Santa Anita right now is absolutely free. If you go to santaanita.com/tripnotepros, you know, I can't promise you're going to pick every winner, but I can promise you that you will be far more prepared than had you not signed up. And it takes literally less than 30 seconds. It's an email address and a checked box and you're in, and they'll email you a link that has pretty much unmatched replay work for the entire meet, or at least through January. Looks like we're going to be starting up again in April. Mm-hmm. So we will go back to having a paid product through February and March. But for right now in January and then in April, if you sign up there, you know, we're going to save you probably 6 hours of replay work every day.
Something I definitely would try to use as much as I can each and every day, and everybody else on the In the Money Media Network as well. Benny, thanks so much for coming on. We'll talk again soon. All right.
Thanks, buddy. Thanks for having me, Spencer. Talk soon.
I want to thank all of the wonderful listeners for this podcast and all the rest of the shows on the In the Money Media Network. This show has been a production of In the Money Media. In the Money Media's president is Pierre Thomas Forentel. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kinchin. And our In the Money Media business manager is Drew Coatney. I'm Spencer Luganbuehl. We will see you next time.